So who would like to do a little refresh? What was the topic that we discussed this morning? I give you a hint. It was before number five. Four, okay. Very good. Anyone can embellish on that nice answer. Yes. And what was the question? Go ahead, look at your notes. No. Number four. What was number four? Okay. Yes. Yeah. Very good. So what did we hear about?
We heard about Lord's different incarnations, specifically those related to creation.
Yes.
Specifically, Sri Rudakshaya Vishnu, how we, the relation between how some matter, some spirit comes to matter, and how the Lord communicates to matter.
Okay, I'm going to read a little bit, just get us focused before we cross the finish line here. I'll just read. As the Super Soul, Vasudeva enters everything in each universe. Generally, conditioned living entities' mind is filled with desires. So because our minds are filled with desires and the Lord is seated in our heart, what does He do? He doesn't say, oh, I don't allow the mode of ignorance. It's not part of my material creation. He doesn't say that. If the desires are within the modes of nature, specifically, the verses that we read says that He connects that soul with matter. Now, the soul is of another energy. The soul is spiritual. And then there's this material energy. So through the agency of the subtle mind, the soul thinks that I'm in contact with matter and I'm enjoying matter and I'm suffering that contact with matter that I was supposed to be enjoying, instead I'm suffering. And all of that is within the mind. Through the agency of the mind, the soul, this is, say it again, the soul contacts matter, although we don't really contact matter. We become conditioned by and think falsely that this is happiness and this is distress. Another way of saying the same thing is in the Uddhava Gita section of the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, Uddhava asks Krishna, what's the cause of suffering? And Krishna says, this is a wonderful question. And I'll narrate a description of the Avanti Brahmana. The whole chapter is describing the answer to that question, what's suffering. Long chapter that ends with Krishna telling Uddhava, or the Avanti Brahmana, coming to the conclusion that the cause of suffering is the mind. Which means if we can withdraw the mind, well, we can't do it, but Krishna can permit us or allow us to withdraw the mind from matter in the enjoying mood and instead apply the mind to service to Krishna, and there's the same matter, and it just becomes service to Krishna, the suffering ends. It's devotional service instead of suffering that carries the soul out of the material circumstance into the spiritual atmosphere, even while embodied and after this body is finished. So It depends upon the desire of the living entity. If the living entity desire becomes changed, it's not like just snap your fingers and say, okay, I'm going to do a U-turn. I don't like this program anymore. It's not that simple. It's not that simple because we have residual desire. We want to enjoy, and the mind wants to be independent. And we're in this stuck paradigm, but we can get out through the agency of the internal potency and the hearing process. Then the mind's desire changes gradually because the soul's desire changes, so the mind's desire changes, so the configurations of matter change by the arrangement of supersoul. The mind works differently and matter works differently by the agency of supersoul, who's seated as neutral. So, as far as matter is concerned, the supersoul is neutral. As far as the soul is concerned, supersoul is his best friend. Supersoul provides these two main functions: inspiration, or knowledge, how to. Just like Krishna says in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Matak smritir gyanam apohanam cha, knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Inspiration, in short. How to forget Krishna, how to remember Krishna. He gives that inspiration. How to reach Krishna. He gives inspiration. And the other specifically mentioned is that the connection between that which is spiritual and that which is material is made through the agency of the mind by the arrangements of supersoul. He sanctions our being an illusion. He in an ongoing manner supervises our involvement with matter, and he grants us release from involvement with matter, if that's what we so desire. And we have to demonstrate it. We really desire it, not just like half desire it. Just a little comment. There's a distinction between There's a technical term that comes from the Renaissance time. Yes, here we go. Theism and deism. One of them means that God creates and then he steps back and it's just the laws of matter that are operative. And that was very popular, particularly during the beginning stages of the Industrial Revolution and the Renaissance period of Europe. Because prior was, you know, a Vedic conception, but there was this other conception that says God's like a clockmaker, because there was a period of time when they were making machines like clocks, and it was, you know, the Swiss and Germans were really into making clocks and, you know, like machines that would just run. So God was likened to the master clock or watchmaker, and he made the watch, made creation, he wound it up, and then that's it. It left his shop, someone bought one, and that's it. It has no further involvement. That's deism. And then theism is there's ongoing involvement. He continues to monitor. And that's our Vaishnava conception. So that's function is Paramatma's function. Upadrashta Anumanta cha. He oversees and he permits or sanctions. He doesn't will us to be in Maya. He doesn't say, please go into ignorance. I think you deserve a nice dose of ignorance so you can know really what happiness is, because you have to experience suffering to know what happiness is, right? Some people think like that. That's not so. You know happiness because you know it's happiness. Anyway, it's both. He sees and he permits. And without his permission, we can't do anything. But his will is in the form of scripture and conveyed by his representatives who are passing on that message of scripture. And that's his will. And the position of love is where the object of love, or the beloved, their will becomes our will. That thy will be mine, in Christ's prayer. That thy will be mine. Not like I become God, but I become a lover of God. Where the lover's, the beloved's will is what I want. And there's no separation between the beloved's will and what I want. It's completely a submission to the to Krishna. When one awakens that spirit, then Supersoul acts differently. And the material energy acts differently. And everything is different because it's the internal potency again. The internal potency is called off. Okay, Maya, lay off. And the internal potency acts. Just like that. Like Krishna's indication. But Krishna's indication is following the living entity's desire. And or specifically their attitude or their regard towards him. And he reciprocates. Here's Srila Prabhupada's purport in text 33, the last one that we discussed, where he explains this. The Lord as Paramatma helps the living entity to get material happiness because the living being is helpless in all respects in obtaining whatever he desires. He proposes and the Lord disposes. In another sense, living beings are parts and parcels of the Lord. They are therefore one with the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, the living beings in all varieties of bodies have been claimed by the Lord as his sons. The sufferings and enjoyments of the sons are indirectly the sufferings and enjoyments of the Father. Still, the Father is not in any way affected directly by the suffering or enjoyment of the sons. He is so kind that he constantly remains with the living being as Paramatma and always tries to convert the living being towards the real happiness. He's our best friend. So that's just a refresh on what we covered so far this morning. Now we're in the home stretch. We're going to cross the finish line, Krishna permitting. There's two more questions, and here's the fifth of the six questions. Oh, wise Sutta, please narrate to us the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Godhead's multi-incarnations, such auspicious adventures and pastimes of the Lord, the Supreme Controller, are performed by his Atmamayaya, his internal powers. So that's the question. It's on this basis that Jiva Goswami says that the prior question was specific to the acts of creation. Now it's his multi-incarnations. However, the first five verses of chapter 3, canto 1, are again addressing the Purusha avatars. And they're three in number. And they're kala, the portions of the plenary portion. And their function is in relation to creation, specific. So it's just like, you know, here, in the material creation, there's the living entity and there's the Paramatma, side by side with the living entity within every body. In the spiritual world, there's no material body, and there's no Paramatma. It's like he doesn't abandon us, but instead of being hidden inside, he's present before us. Or the opposite, because he was before us, but we turned away from him, he hid himself in our heart. Like this example of fire and wood. And we can make that fire and wood come out by bringing fire to the wood, and we can bring Paramatma outside, just like Dhruva Maharaj. He saw within his heart the form of the Lord. And then his meditation broke, because the form of the Lord disappeared from his heart. And he was startled. And he looked in all directions, and standing right in front of him was the same Supreme Lord who he saw in his heart, now standing before him by this same process. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And his process of fixing his mind on the form of the Lord, and the Lord disclosed his form. Along with the Purusha avatar descriptions are the other various categories. How many categories are there?
Six.
And Purusha avatars is one of those six. And there's five more amongst our learned scholarly Vaishnavas here. Who would like to list one by one of the other, to see if we can add up to six? Who knows, who would like to volunteer some of the other forms of the Lord? Avatar. Purusha avatars? Lila avatars. We're not doing raising your hand. It's like we're going to get a cacophony of sound here. After Lila avatars, that's two. One more? No. Don't raise your hand, please. Yes. Guna avatar. Shaktivesha avatar. Manvantara. Raise your hand. Next one? Yuga avatars. Okay, that's six. So, in this chapter, without specifying, in the purports, Prabhupada does some specifying, but the list is a short list, because the list is as would be as long as there are waves in the ocean. And that's a long list. They're countless. And it says like that, countless. And in that, after the list of 20, after text 27 comes text 28, and this is not right. There's the verse where, anyway, Ete Changsa Kala Pungsa Krishnas Tu Bhagavan Swayam Indrari Vyakulam Lokam Ridayanti Yuge Yuge. The indication is, out of all of these Changsa Kala, the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world, one amongst them is the source of all the rest of them. Even though he's also listed in amongst the avatars of Vishnu. Amongst the avatars of Vishnu, one is the source of all the other avatars, including Vishnu. This is our Mahavakya of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. What does Mahavakya mean again? Mahavakya, principal utterance. That is to say, anything else in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, if you get confused, look at that one and try to understand whatever the message of Srimad Bhagavatam must be in the line of that one. Or the other ones are illuminating that one. If you get it otherwise, you have to hit the reset button. You've misunderstood. It's the personality of Godhead, the summum bonum, the source of all things. The source of all incarnations is Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You can see how important this section of the Bhagavatam is, yes? So, we're going now to the earlier verses, 1 through 5, where the Purusha avatars are being described. And there it describes the purpose of the Purusha avatars. And it's to assist the living entities who desire to enjoy independently of Krishna to accomplish Mission Impossible. You can't enjoy independently of Krishna. So to try to do that, you have to have illusion. So the Purusha avatars assist, facilitating the creation of the material world, an illusory representation of the spiritual world. And one by one, they're identified. The first of the Purusha avatars is Mahavishnu, or Karnadakshai Vishnu. And as you see, here's what he does. He's generating universes just by breathing. That would be a really good trick. So many universes come from all the pores of his transcendental body. And they start as little, according to Sri Brahma Samhita, golden seeds. And those golden seeds expand. Then he inhales, and they are withdrawn. Again, within his body during the resting period of creation. And then again he exhales. And again the universes come out, and it's endless, the cycle of creation, maintenance, withdrawing, annihilation, resting. And again, so it's the picture of Vedic time is cyclical, material time, it's cyclical. And all things, big cycles, intermediate cycles, small cycles, it's cyclical. As we say, been there, done that. It's happened so many times again and again. Bhutva bhutva pradiyate, in the language of Bhagavad Gita. So this is the first of the Purusha avatars. From his body, not exactly skin, but the pores of his transcendental body, the innumerable universes are coming out. And another function of Karnadakshai Vishnu is he glances over Pradhan, the sum total, undifferentiated material substance or material energy. In its undifferentiated state, like a cloud, he glances. And from that glance, all kinds of things, very powerful glance. From his glance, all the living entities are carried by his glance, or even more specifically by Shambhu, who carries the living entities within his glance, or his glance is Shambhu. And the living entities plus the time energy enter into Pradhan. And then the material elements start to separate out. The undifferentiated start to differentiate. And all of this is described in various parts of our Vedic literature, certainly in Srimad Bhagavatam several times. So, specifically in the purport of this verse describing Mahavishnu, Prabhupada speaks of it this way. Mahavishnu is the inner soul of the whole vastness of Prakriti. Then Garbhadakshai Vishnu, within each of those universes, he enters, or Mahavishnu makes an expansion of himself, who enters within each and every universe. And then Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and that's the basis of the universe, is expanding because he's present. Then from his navel, a lotus flower magically, mysteriously grows. Anybody have heard of that before? A lotus flower growing from someone's navel? Very unique. Very creative. And on top of the lotus stem is a lotus flower, and on top of the lotus flower, Lord Brahma appears. And So Garbhadakshay Vishnu is the inner soul of the collective jivas in each, within each universe. And then Shiradakshay Vishnu, the third of the Purusha avatars, manifests by expanding. Garbhadakshay Vishnu expands within every heart of every living being and within every atom also. So, in addition, specific language is there in our Vedic literature that the avatar forms of the Lord manifest from or through the agency of Shiradakshay Vishnu. You do a little research, I've done it, and you'll find different statements. Garbhadakshay Vishnu is the source of those incarnations. We can also say Krishna is the source of those incarnations. And there's different statements, and it's treated a little bit in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Krishna Das Kaviraj says, there are these apparently contradictory statements, and trying to understand them helps one's intelligence become strong. And one simple way of understanding this, I gave a class in Mayapur on this topic once, it's actually one entity variously manifested, and so all the statements are correct. Let's do this. How many people would you say are seated in the temple room this morning? Maybe 40, 50? Something like that. And within the heart of each of the living entities, the human forms of life here, there's a feature of Paramatma. So we could say there's 40 to 50 Paramatmas, but more precisely it's one Paramatma that's variously manifested. The example that the Vedic example is given is the sun shining on pots of water, and although the sun is shining on so many pots of water, it's one sun shining on so many pots of water. And as the shining and the reflection of the sun on the pot of water appears to be many, it's still one sun. There's so many Paramatmas, but it's one Paramatma variously manifested. It's not different Paramatmas, Paramatma X, Y, and Z. It's one Paramatma. Then the universes. How many universes are there? Innumerable. And there's a Garbhadakshay Vishnu within each one of those universes. So how many Garbhadakshay Vishnus are there? There's one. As with there's one Paramatma, variously manifest. One Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And Mahavishnu is but one. So now we'll take there's Shiradakshay Vishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and Mahavishnu. How many Vishnus do we have? It's one. Given by different names, according to different functions, all of which are part of fulfilling the desire of Vasudev, Krishna, to make possible the process of creation. And even he doesn't lift a pinky. Even with Govardhan Hill, he lifted Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand, but Krishna doesn't even lift a pinky to make the whole of creation happen. Because he also expands as Sankarshan, Pradumna, and Aniruddha. And they expand as these Purusha avatars that take care of. So it's teamwork. It's expansions of the Supreme Lord whose mood is to serve Vasudev. Not only the living entities, but even the expansions of the Supreme Lord, the Purusha avatar specifically, that's their mood. Even Balaram, the first expansion, his mood is he wants to serve. So what to speak of the living entities? So these are some of the presentations made within the first five verses of chapter 3, which is in response to the fifth question. Shiradakshay Vishnu is the inner soul of each jiva. Then it starts this limited list, and it says explicitly, this is some of the primary incarnations. So the list begins with the Kumaras. There they are. They're just little boys. And they're very special. They're incarnations. They're a special kind of incarnation. What kind of incarnation are they? Huh? Shaktivesh. They're Shaktivesh avatars, and specifically, which Shakti of the Lord is it that they are manifesting or bearing? Knowledge. Jnana Shakti. So they're very special. This idea of Shaktivesh avatar, it's not like they're really smart. But they're, the fullness of the Lord's Jnana Shakti is manifested by them. So they're acting, although they're jiva souls, they're acting as Vishnu category, but they're not Vishnu category. They're manifesting the Shakti of Vishnu in fullness, which is really something. So they're very qualified, and because of their qualification, he invests the fullness of his Gyan Shakti in these. So they're the first in the list of the avatar forms of the Lord. Varahadev, which category is he? Nila avatar. Nila avatar. So he's an incarnation of the Lord who rescues the earth from the lower regions within the Garbhadak ocean. So the specifically the phraseology is Pluto's region of filthy matter. Something that I've never gotten a clear answer to is, how can you have filthy matter at the bottom of Garbhadakshai Vishnu's ocean? Because it comes from him, so how is it? Anyway, it's so the lower planetary regions, Atala, Sutala, Patala, Rasatala, and down the seven planetary regions, the Earth fell out of its orbit because Hiranyaksha had taken so much gold from one part, so it was unbalanced, and it fell out of its orbit to the lower regions. And Varahadev came to rescue the earth and lifted the earth on his tusks, and you know the rest. I had a big battle with Hiranyaksha and smashed him with his hoof and broke open his head. Thus ends Hiranyaksha. But so he rescued the earth and destroyed one of the Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha brothers. Narada Muni is also listed as he's a Shaktivesh avatar who bears the Lord's Bhakti Shakti. The fullness of the Lord's potency of devotion is with Narada. So he is very special. He propagates devotional service, but his capacity to do so is as powerful as the Lord's capacity to do so, which is without limit. We heard some question the other day about Naranarayan Rishi. Here's a picture, an artist's drawing of Naranarayan Rishi, and Vadrikashram is where they stay. And they and their devotees are engaged in devotional service. Here is Narada paying a visit at their ashram. And they're twins. So Narayana and Nara were twin sons. So they're called Nara and Narayan Rishi, or sometimes Nara Narayan Rishi, one phrase. They're twin sons of the wife of King Dharma, and they propagate transcendental knowledge very generously. Lord Kapiladev, who enunciated Sankhya philosophy, there's one purport in Srimad Bhagavatam, I guess I could pull it up and show you, where Srila Prabhupada indicates in the category of Shaktivesh avatar, there's two divisions. One of those divisions is this one, Bhagavat Avesh, and Lord Kapila and Rishabdev are examples of that, and they're forms of the Lord that are exhibiting very magnificently the teachings of the personality of Godhead. And another category of Shakya Vesha Avatar is those who are manifesting specific potencies or Shaktis of the Supreme Lord in their fullness within this world. And those Shakti Vesha Avatars are then further divided into two. Some are Jivas and some are Vishnu Tattvas. Ananta Shesh is an example of a Vishnu Tattva Shakti Vesha Avatar. His protection potency is exhibited. So this is Bhagavata Vesh, Lord Kapila, who is teaching Sankhya philosophy. Dattatreya expounded the philosophy of spirit soul still today, at least in some parts of Gujarat, very popular. And those of you who have been to the Juhu temple, you've seen those dioramas around the side, and they have a nice diorama of Dattatreya. And as you see, he's very interestingly fond of, or maybe the other way around, dogs are fond of him. Krishna keeps cows and Dattatreya keeps these guys. Don't ask me about why. Not much is explained. There's a nice cow in the background. Yajna is mentioned. Yajna is a form of the Lord that appears to teach sacrifice, yajna. In the Treta Yuga, yajna appears as the manifestation of the Yuga Dharma. He bears the Yuga Dharma and teaches the process of sacrifice. And specific, in one special circumstance, during the period of Swayambhuva Manu, there was Indra had a problem so big that he had to fill the post with somebody else. So Yajna took that post. So we find, that's exceptional, we find same kind of idea that Lord Brahma is a post, and if there isn't a qualified person, sometimes the Lord fills the post, because you have to have a really qualified person to be creator of the universe. Doesn't have any problems, can do the job and doesn't fall into Maya, becoming proud of his being the creator. So Yajna is one of the incarnations that's mentioned. Rishabhdev, here's another example of Bhagavat Avesh, one of the Lord's forms of divine absorption in the teachings, and presents those teachings. So this is a depiction of Rishabhdev teaching Bharat Maharaj and his other 99 brothers in the way of achieving perfection. So of those 100 sons, the Navayogendras, 9 great personalities, became perfected souls, and we find them identified in the beginning of the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Maharaj Nimi is instructed by those Navayogendras, and it's a nice little detail, but of those 100 sons, some became perfected brahmanas, some became kshatriyas, and some went beyond the varnashram system and became mahabhagavatas. So as an indication, not by birth alone, but by qualification. So Bharat Maharaj became the king following Rishabhdev, and Rishabhdev, towards the conclusion of his life, became an avaduta. And there's lots of discussion or description of that in the 5th canto of the Bhagavatam. King Prithu, another Shaktivesha avatar, who exhibited the Lord's ruling potency and dismissed through that ruling potency lots of problems on the planet, including pseudo-religious principles. And another was that Mother Earth was not supplying sufficiently for the population of the earth. So Prithu brought her to task and was ready to chastise her severely, and she explained why she was restricting her supply, because there was the non-performance of religious activity. Earth then restricted her supply. So now that there's a religious king instead of King Vena, I'll supply. I'll be very happy to supply to all these qualified people. Matsya Avatar protected Vaivasvata Manu, protected the Vedas, and so on. Kurma, down here, provided the post, the basis upon which the Mundara Mountain was used for churning the milk ocean. And part of that churning produced Dhanvantari, where he's bearing this pot of nectar. And Dhanvantari also established wonderful teachings for health and well-being. Mohini Murti, after the pot of nectar was generated, she protected the devas by taking from the daityas that pot of nectar. Lord Nrisingadev, we know very well. Lord Nrisingadev. Vamanadev, a dwarf brahmana who came before Bali Maharaj and begged 3 steps of land. And there's the 3rd step going on Bali's head. Parashuram or Bhrigupati, another. He's a Shaktivesh avatar also. This Dushta Dhamana Shakti, the potency of the Lord for punishing or subduing. In this case, it was subduing the unqualified kings that were present at the time. And 21 times he traveled throughout all the land and chased or killed one or the other, the unqualified kings, who then scattered in all directions, those who survived, and populated the earth and ruled in various kingdoms. Vyasadeva, literary incarnation, who took the Vedas and divided them and put them in a written form to assist the people of the age of Kali who can't remember very well, even after they read it so many times. Lord Ramachandra, it manifested the spirit of an ideal king, but at the same time, not just an ideal king, but manifested divine powers, although appearing like a human, and took care of Ravana. Lord Balaram appeared as the brother of Krishna and assisted him in his pastimes. Krishna himself is in this list of avatars of Vishnu, and he advented himself at the request of Mother Earth to remove the burden of the world. Lord Buddha, very popular in some parts of the world, he appeared just for the purpose of deluding the atheistic so-called followers of the Vedas, because they were taking the Vedas as authorization for animal slaughter, and so he stopped the animal slaughter and rejected the Vedas and established the principles of ahimsa. And it's worthy noting that in the list of incarnations, both Buddha and Kalki are in the future tense because of when it was written, predicting Buddha before he came, similarly predicting Kalki. So if you think Kalki it isn't going to come, think again. Don't wait around till Kalki comes around. The age of Kali is very bad, but Kalki delivers the remaining population, liberates the remaining population, and then Satya Yuga begins, following Kalki. So, we're about to cross the finish line. Whew. Like a marathon. The Seattle Marathon. The sixth question of the sages is, here's the question, text 23 of the first chapter. Bruhi yogeshware krishne brahmanye dharma varmani svam kashtam aduno peite dharma kam sharanam gataha. So Krishna has gone. It's now the age of Kali when the sages are speaking to Sutta. Kali has begun. When Krishna was present, religious principles had shelter. But now that Krishna has gone to his own abode, where is the shelter for religious principles? Please tell us. Nice, very beautiful painting of Uddhava coming before Krishna and the sage Maitreya in the background hearing Uddhava Gita. And just after Uddhava Gita was finished, Krishna left. Krishna, who is the protector of Dharma, has gone. And Kali Yuga begins in full swing. Where has religious principle taken shelter in this age of Kali? So the answer is provided. Krishne svadhagamo pate, dhagamo bhagate, dharma gyanadibhisaha, kalo nashta drisham esha, puranarko duno didiha. Puranarko. There's light from this Purana. And this light from the Purana is as brilliant as the sun. This Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun. It has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in this age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. Beautiful poetic simile or metaphor. The sun is setting in the western horizon. And just after the setting of the sun, on the eastern horizon comes the moon. But the moon generally is just a reflection of the light of the sun, so it's a dimmer reflection. But in this case, the full moon of Srimad Bhagavatam is as brilliant as the sun. And Prabhupada liked to describe this. But the difference is the sun rays are very hot and scorching at times. And the sun rays are very cool and soothing. So as brilliant as the sun, but still as cool and soothing. Because when Krishna came with his weapons, he destroyed and killed the demons like fire. But the Bhagavatam doesn't have weapons. It has cooling, soothing rays. The pastimes of Krishna, just by hearing them, the perils of the age of Kali are destroyed and religious principles are embodied. Those who take shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam is as good as taking shelter of Krishna without all the heat, but with cooling and soothing hearing of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the fullness of religious principles are found for one who takes shelter there. That's the sixth question. And just a little quick, with Krishna's departure, all, as Krishna left, you see all these, everything is disappearing with him. Religious principles, knowledge, everything. And so, to give light in this dark age of Kali, Krishna appeared in the literary form. Nice painting. The first two cantos, the lotus feet, and all the different features of the Lord up to his lotus face and his forehead. And this is the 12 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna has incarnated. So he's incarnated both in sound, in his holy name, and in the literature form as Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore these two together, the chanting of the holy name and the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, gives us full access to Krishna even in this age of Kali. after Krishna has gone. Some of the glories that are mentioned in the remaining verses, it was compiled by Vyasadeva. The literary incarnation is the cream of all Vedic literatures. It's the summum bonum of life. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the torchbearer for the blind people of this age. Looks like the Statue of Liberty. But it's Vyasadeva. And he's not holding up a torch in the middle of the Hudson River. It's the Srimad Bhagavatam giving light into this age of darkness. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. We finished. Any comments or questions? You want to turn the projector off? Save the bulb. Okay, way in the back. Way in the back. Hare Krishna. A question from the Japa retreat. What channel are you tuned into anyway? The holy name is not different than the Lord. But the Lord may manifest different aspects according to his liking. Yes? That's what it means. So it's not different. It's non-different. But the holy name is manifesting a very, very special, prominent feature of the most merciful, just like we say of Lord Chaitanya. Most munificent form of the Lord. So you could say the same thing. Well, I thought all forms of the Lord were non-different. They're non-different and different. And it's such apparent contradictions are reconciled in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay? Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, I heard one of your lectures about the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and you talked about vibhuti.
Talked about?
Vibhuti.
Vibhutis. That's from the 3rd chapter of the 1st canto.
So, vibhutis are...
As well as the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Okay.
Are vibhutis one of the 6 avatars?
No.
So what are vibhutis?
Vibhutis means opulences. And it's a particular category of opulences. It's a reflection of Krishna's spiritual potencies within this material world, but it's of a degree of excellence. It's material. It's a reflection of his spiritual potencies with a degree of excellence. Of mountains, I am the Himalayas, etc. It's the best of everything material. Those are Krishna's opulent vibhutis. Okay? Okay? The presence of Paramatma, I'm not sure, I didn't catch the first part. What was the first part? Don't everybody say, just you say. Clearly, quickly. Speak.
Okay.
Did you catch it? Yes. How do you know what's super soul and what's like gobbledygook? That's what you want to know? Yeah. Guru Sadhu Shastra. Should I expand on that one, or you understand what I mean when I say that one?
I understand that, but my question is, how do we understand the presence of Paramatma?
How do we understand the presence of Paramatma? Well, how do you mean, how do we understand? We understand through scripture. We can understand through, based upon scripture, what practically happens. I described a number of things of what Paramatma does. He is being within our heart. He knows our desires, and he's reciprocating with our desires, and as well as our deserve, guna and karma. He's reciprocating. There are some times where it's more evident, and there's some times where it's not so evident. But through scripture we can know it's always the case that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is controlling the material energy. A little story is coming to mind. For some part of my devotional service, I was regional secretary in New England, in the Boston, Connecticut, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, that nice area of the country. So one of our devotees, when distributing books in the airport, met a farmer from Maine, like way up there. So the man was very appreciative, and his wife, and they kept some communication going. At one point he invited the devotees to come visit him and show him how to prepare prasadam and have kirtan. And so we went, a group of us went. It was very nice, really far away. And then he was describing something that had just happened, you know, even more so than in Seattle, like the snowstorm that you had a few days ago. It was we came after a really severe ice and snowstorm, and it kind of had gone away, but there was still some snow around. And he was describing something that had just happened to him. Farmers stick together because you have to, and it's just for survival. So one of his friends, his tractor or something was stuck, and he needed some help to get his tractor unstuck. So he decided, he was kind of like a leader amongst the farmers of the area, so he decided to go. So he got in his car and started going. And he was thinking while he was in his car, I don't know if this is very safe because the roads are so icy. But he was wanting to help his friend, and so he kept going. And he got to a place where there was a bridge. And he was thinking, whoa, I better slow down. It's really icy. And as he was thinking that, the car went completely out of control. He put on the brakes and nothing happened. Turned left, nothing happened. Turned right, nothing happened. He just kept sliding. And it was a one-lane bridge, a big ravine. And the car had a mind of its own. It was going to the edge. And he was thinking, this is it. Kaput. Life is over. And as the car went over the edge of the bridge, suddenly it snapped back and went straight across the bridge and on the other side, and he stopped. And he thought, Krishna. He said specifically, not just God, I thought Krishna. Because I'd been reading Bhagavad Gita, I thought, Krishna just did this. It wasn't anything I did or the material energy did. It was Krishna. Krishna wants me to do something for him. He's giving me some opportunity, some very clear signal. I'm under his care and in his control, and he's giving me a second chance. And now you've come to our home. You're devotees of Krishna. What do you think Krishna wants of me? So we had a nice discussion after that. But there's an example of unmistakably the hand of Krishna just like, boop, put the car back. It also took it off, but brought it back. And there was no law of physics that brought it back. So something may be radical like that, where it's, the presence of Super Soul is clear. Just responding to your question, how do we recognize Super Soul is there? But scripturally, behind everything, not, as the scripture says, not even a blade of grass will move without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So the sanction of the Supreme Lord is behind everything. It's not like Krishna wills bad things to happen. But without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, material energy doesn't move, because the material energy is under his direction. So how to realize the presence of Super Soul is become sensitive and introspective and, take notice of things that are happening. And things don't happen by accident, by sanction of the Supreme Lord. Or this other method that we've been hearing about, by taking fire and putting it by the wood, the fire comes out. So the presence of the fire in the wood can be detected by bringing fire to the wood. Similarly, the presence of Paramatma can be experienced, felt, literally, through sacred sounds, spiritual vibrations, hearing them. So the challenge is for us to be good receivers of those sacred sounds. You chant and hear nicely. That's how to. You want another method, or you're okay with that one? That's the one that's recommended. Okay.
Gupta Avatar, or the hidden
incarnation.
Gupta Avatar. Where did Jagannath or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fall in these incarnations, and how do you identify what are the Gupta Avatars of Krishna?
I've never heard anything scriptural about that one. Lord Chaitanya is not revealing his identity as the personality of Godhead, or concealing his identity as his own devotee. So there's one reference, but specific scriptural identification of that I've never come across, right? Maybe haven't been looking carefully enough. I can do a little folio search and see if there's a Gupta avatar mentioned in the scripture. But so Lord Chaitanya is one where he's concealing his identity. But Lord Jagannath isn't concealing his identity. He's Krishna. He's Purushottam, Chetra, Jagannath, opulence, Krishna. In a very special mood. But Krishna, very clear, Krishna, Balaram, and Subhadra. He didn't do a very good job of hiding his identity, if he's wanting to hide his identity. Balaram, Subhadra, and who else? So he is going by the name Jagannath, the Lord of creation, the Lord of the universe. Krishna. He's a deity form, Archa Avatar. Go ahead.
So we were discussing about the last incarnation, second incarnation.
Yes.
and sometimes we speak with demigods who have some incarnations.
What's that?
Demigods also have incarnations.
I'm not aware of any. Can you give me some examples?
Like Shankaracharya, Lord Shiva.
Okay, that's not incarnation. Well, maybe you can use that term. An expansion of, or... Okay.
So, is that also orchestrated by the Lord? Is that orchestrated by the Lord?
Orchestrated?
Oh, yeah. Nothing happens without the sanction of the Lord. You're very patient. And he's very persistent. That's maybe where your patience comes from. Go ahead.
So the Lord, so they basically expand to assistance between the Lord's incarnations, right? So yeah. All that is already like, it's a part of a bigger picture.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. And the plan behind it is, ultimately, bringing living entities back to him. Whatever the categories are. Now, it may look otherwise, like Shankaracharya, may look otherwise, but, you know, there's a purpose behind it. There's a specific purpose was to bring people back to the Vedas. So he did that. And then part of the bigger picture is following him was the four Sampradaya Acharyas that not only brought people back to the Vedas but to the principle of worshipping the Supreme Lord that paved the way for Lord Chaitanya. So that's, you know, it's part of the bigger picture.
Yeah, but we see a lot of followers of Shankaracharya.
Sure.
So isn't it like the arranging for people to worship.
Yes. Yes. He's facilitating the desires of people in Kali Yuga. They can be Vedic but not surrender to Krishna. And frustrated, so they're not just worshippers of devatas, they're worshippers of Brahman. He's facilitating, that's what the Lord does. That's material creation. He facilitates desires of living entities. And there are some living entities that want this and not that, and so he supplies. About which?
Person
Bhagavata. Yeah.
Should we consider service to Person Bhagavata, personal service, and their instruction, following their instruction? Is there any differentiation?
Sure.
Is one better than the other?
Yes. Serving, following the instruction is better. Is that all right?
Both
have great spiritual benefit. But supposing one does personal service but doesn't follow the instruction. Supposing one doesn't have the opportunity to do personal service but follows the instruction.
Sacrifices done for Indra, you know, that Yajna and all those things. So there is a kind of contradiction. Is it just
the
time difference? Or?
No. It's a statement that says, just like the Supreme Lord appeared as Lord Buddha, who dismissed the Vedas. He who establishes the Vedas appeared in a form that dismissed the Vedas. That's a contradiction, right? Looks like. But like this other discussion, it was purposeful. There was a purpose to be accomplished. Persons who were would-be followers of the Vedas were abusing it. So the Lord came and, you know, dismissed the Vedas. Of course, that created a problem, because there were proper followers of the Vedas, and following Lord Buddha, you know, the shelter of the Vedas was gone, at least for those who were followers of Buddha or influenced by his teaching. The wake that he left behind him. So that was filled by... So that you have to look at the bigger picture. Let's go to, why is there karmakanda yajnas? Krishna is against it, but Krishna establishes it in the Vedas. It's Vedic. Right? Not like made up. It's in the Vedas. It's the largest portion of the Vedas. It's karmakanda rituals that Krishna dismisses in the Bhagavad Gita. And then he takes the post of Indra, who is recipient of some of the yajnas. It says, you look at the bigger picture, and it's not so bewildering. That's needed. Why are those things there? That's needed for persons who won't surrender to Krishna. They're in the material world because they've got that attitude. Now, do we just like trash them, or do we give them something to do that's less than surrender to Krishna, but can help them become elevated and a little protected and gradually move through the modes of nature and come to a more proximate position to surrender to Krishna? So we have demigods and worship of the demigods. That's part of the whole picture of the Vedas. But you need really qualified people to be in those posts, and if there isn't someone really qualified, then at least in this particular case, an incarnation of the Lord himself took that post. Even though what you said. Okay. Up front here, Aditi had a question.
This is a really off-topic
question. An off-topic question. I'm not unfamiliar with off-topic questions.
So,
there,
you know how Duryodhana was evil and tried to kill
Krishna's
devotees?
I didn't get it. Did you get it?
Duryodhana was always evil and tried to kill Arjuna.
Duryodhana was evil and tried to kill Arjuna.
Arjuna and Krishna.
So, but he didn't get killed by Krishna?
But he didn't what?
He didn't get killed by Krishna.
He didn't get killed by Krishna.
He didn't get killed by Krishna.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
My question is, Krishna was in a vicinity when he got killed by Bhima.
Yeah.
Did he go to heaven?
Yes,
or
heaven. It's the spiritual world. Those who were present, those who died when Krishna was present, it specifically Prabhupada writes in one purport of Bhagavad Gita, they were liberated. Haribol. Although Krishna didn't kill him, he was present when Duryodhana died. Who is an incarnation of Lord Krishna?
Lord Buddha.
Lord Buddha. Since he's an incarnation of Krishna, why what?
Why is his philosophy so different?
Why is his philosophy so different? Because the people at the time couldn't take the full medicine. They could take only the portion of medicine that he was able to give them. So he gave them what they could take. Non-violence. But it was part of the bigger picture that following that, the next, and then the next, and then the next, is part of a plan. But, so at least for the fallen age of Kali, this much Be nonviolent. And even today, those who call themselves Buddhists, I mean, His Grace Dalai Lama isn't vegetarian. Huh? Nonviolent Buddhism? The head guy of that whole thing is not vegetarian. It was a shocker. There was a big rally in Washington, D.C. some years ago to, like, you know, free Tibet and give it back to Dalai Lama. And, you know, so he was invited as a, you know, the guest of honor. Big, big thing. Around the White House and, you know, in that area. So he was staying in a hotel and they brought him vegetarian, told him, take it away and bring me veal. The people were shocked. Not only meat, but veal. And, you know, I thought you're Buddhist. He said, no, we can eat these things. What to speak of the run of the mill? So, but at least, you know, be nonviolent. Whether you're Dalai Lama or a guy in the street, be nonviolent. So some people can't do that. So that much for the age of Kali. Stop the slaughter of animals. Okay? Is it a good question or not? You have a very unique way of sitting. I can imagine your question is going to be unique too.
That the Maya could distract us when he wanted us.
I didn't get it.
Why did Krishna?
Why did Krishna send Maya? Send Maya if he wanted us back.
Why did Krishna send Maya to distract us when he wanted us?
When he wanted us back.
That means it's a good question. I got the question. You don't need to say it again. I got it. Okay, take the microphone from him, please. Okay, you're paying attention now, right? Okay. Even Krishna does things that he doesn't want to do. Although he's the supreme personality of God, and he can do whatever he wants to do. But when living entities, his beloved part and parcel living entities, do things that are against what Krishna wants them to do, he doesn't say no. He gives his advice. You really shouldn't do this. I don't want to do it. I want to be in Maya. No, you don't really want to be in Maya. It's not nice. Oh. All right. But it'll be, I'm telling you ahead of time, you won't enjoy, you'll be suffering instead. I'll take my chances. Okay. And here's an invitation. Anytime you want to come back, just let me know. I'll bring you back to me. And even if you don't take the invitation, I'll send people to remind you, please come back to me. Please come back to me. It's not what Krishna wants, but Krishna doesn't interfere with our free will. So he makes arrangements for the free will of a living entity, even if it's dumb, hurtful, foolish. But it's, you know, it's illusion. So it's not like the suffering of the living entity is not ultimate reality. Nor their so-called happiness or pursuit of happiness is not ultimate reality. The ultimate reality is Krishna's giving them the opportunity, please come back. Okay? All right. Just make sure that you don't go for Maya, right? Not only you know that you shouldn't, but don't. That's the challenge. Yes?
So, Maharaj, in the pastime of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha,
yeah.
Like, because Hiranyaksha took away all the gold from the earth, Mother Earth.
Not took it away, but took it from one part of the earth to another part of the earth, so it was an imbalance.
So, when the Lord incarnated as Varaha Avatar and then took Mother Earth on the tusks and brought it back, and then he fought with Hiranyaksha.
What arrangement was made to put the gold back in its proper place?
Another question is, so Lord Varaha.
That really was your question, huh?
So the form of the Lord Varaha was so huge, because as you know, the Mother Earth is so big, so when you want to carry that, his form would have been so big. And then, what was the form of Hiranyaksha?
He also had assumed a huge form. He had mystic powers too.
At that time, Hiranyakashipu was ruling Mother. He was ruling the earth. And then what happened when it went to the darkest, filthy regions? Did it get corrupted?
Did who get corrupted? Huh?
What happened to the
earth? The earth? It was brought back to the surface, brought back into proper position by Varaha.
At the time, both Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were on the earth itself when it went to the filthy place? Or?
Oh, I see what you're asking. Let me respond to your question by asking you a question. When they were trying to churn Mandara Mountain, it was sinking. And so Lord Kurma assumed the form of a tortoise, and his back became the resting place for the Mandara Mountain, correct? So, question, what was Kurma resting on? What was Kurma resting on? He didn't need to answer. He didn't need to rest on anything. Everything rests on him. The Lord can perform activities that defy our little pea brain sense of logic that says you have to have, you know, because it's within our experience, you have to have this, you're going to have that. The cause and effect requirements of material nature, you have to have this, you're going to have that. So, Lord Varaha went to the bottom of the Garbhodak Ocean, and it wasn't that Lord Varaha was on the earth planet. He lifted the earth planet on his tusks, and he placed the earth planet in a resting position while he fought with Hiranyaksha, who was on earth but had assumed this gigantic form to fight, because he also had mystic powers. And he was killed. Although, you know, somebody that has mystic powers like that, how can you kill them? Lord Varaha can kill him. And the demigods celebrated. And Hiranyakashipu had a funeral. And so on. So there, as far as your first question, it's an interesting academic question. There's no information one way or the other about it. So let's just assume some adjustment was made without the detail of what that adjustment was. Next.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Take a little break from the technology, huh? You're doing a great job. The devotees out there are giving the feedback. You're keeping track, and then they're watching and they're saying, wow, this is... But there's one comment was, the commercials are weird. I said, I don't know anything about commercials. There's commercials?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Vishnu has four hands.
Yes.
So what is the significance of the four hands?
He has symbols within those four hands.
And, my next question is, like, what is the what we should understand from the various things which is holding in his hand?
Two are for benedicting and two are for destroying. Pritranaya sadhanam vinashaya shuduskritam. Which one do you like?
All are good.
Okay.
Maharaj, I have two questions. The first one is what we have been expressing on saying that material desire is the root cause of our material existence and also our suffering. And one of the basis is that I wanted to be the enjoyer.
Yeah.
So, taking a U-turn and saying that I want the spiritual desire that Krishna, I wanted to serve Krishna and wanted to do everything so that Krishna gets the enjoyment. So, being in the spiritual path right now, I'm not able to conceptualize or get an idea where I can give away my enjoyment in the spiritual realm also.
The answer is, you don't have to give away your enjoyment, rather you enjoy the best. But the best enjoyment is love, where the enjoyment of the beloved is my enjoyment. The happiness of love surpasses all other happiness. It's like the happiness of goodness is when you do something, you go out of your way. We've all had this experience. You go out of your way to do something that is to assist another person in whatever their circumstance. It could be distress or not distress, just an act of kindness. There's a happiness that goes with that. It's a material mode of goodness. It conditions the living entities to a sense of happiness. Then there's transcendental love. We'll skip the material idea of love, where it's, you know, what's in it for me. But the transcendental sense of love is the happiness of the personality of Godhead. I don't abandon happiness. I find the highest happiness so fulfilling that this other thing fades into insignificance. Nothing. No attraction. Because of the sense of fullness, of happiness. Oh, I don't leave aside my happiness. But my happiness is Krishna's happiness, Krishna's pleasure. Very nice. Okay.
So, the avatars that we have seen, most of the avatars were masculine. They were male.
Yeah, all but one.
So, why is that?
What happened?
Was Krishna biased to take that?
What was the last part of your question? I got the frame. What's the last part?
So, all these avatars.
I got the frame. What's the last part?
The last part was that only the last avatar which is depicted is that the Kali avatar is the feminine form.
No. Kalki is a king, not feminine. Mohini is the only feminine out of them.
My question was why there were limited
female forms. Take that microphone away from him. The answer is the Lord is neither male nor female. In the corporeal sense of male or female. But in the transcendental sense, even Mohini Murti is Purusha, although appearing in a female form. And it was purposeful. So Purusha means the enjoyer. And we're to be the enjoyed. We're female, whatever gender body we may have. From a spiritual perspective, the soul is Prakriti, to be enjoyed by Purusha. So just like, you know, hit the delete button with the corporeal sense of male-female and go to the transcendental sense of the Lord is Purusha and we're Prakriti. So in the spiritual world, whatever the form may be, whether it's a cowherd boy or a cowherd girl, it's male or female form in spiritual form, but we're to be enjoyed. It's for Krishna's, everything is for Krishna's pleasure. And the deeper sense also is, there's Radha and Krishna. This one is something you're not going to be able to put inside your mental box. That the form of Radha and Krishna, although appearing to be two, is actually one. Wait a minute. Two forms, but it's actually one entity. The Shakti and the Shaktiman. The Purusha and the Prakriti. One entity. And the spiritual realm. So it's all Krishna. And Krishna's energy. So we don't worry about that. It's not a bias. It's he's the enjoyer. Whether it's in Mohini form as the enjoyer or any of the other forms as the enjoyer, he's the enjoyer. So therefore we use the nomenclature he. Not in the corporeal sense, but in the transcendental sense of being the enjoyer. And in relation to him, we are the enjoyed. Last question. Who'd like to have the last question? Right here, Father Amkumba. Last question.
This could be a very broad answer, but when you talk about Pluto here, is there a relation, how do you relate the solar system with the Vedic definition of the different planetary systems? Of the three?
I don't have an answer to that. I'm not conversant in Vedic astrology and astronomy to give the answer to your question. It may, the word, using the word Pluto is taken directly from the Bhagavatam. I don't know the Sanskrit word, and is Pluto the exact rendering of the Sanskrit word? Or is it something that Prabhupada was using because Pluto is not a heavenly planet? It's not an earthly planet. But where it is in the cosmology of the universe, that I don't know. So it may have been just a literary device or something. So I can't answer your question. Sorry to end on that note. Maybe somebody here knows? Okay. Well then there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
You mean that's for 6 o'clock?